I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians.
So, Sam,
yeah,
I know Casey and I were talking about this before you got here, but what percentage of martial arts instructors do you think are absolute fucking phonies?
Oh, God. I'm going to put it somewhere between 30 and 60%.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's a wide range.
Yeah.
Why that much discrepancy? What's the...
Because I'm not really hooked up to martial arts anymore, but I remember for the few years... Okay, my martial arts history is strange. I needed a physical outlet at a certain stage in my life. I just needed to work out some feelings that I was having and work on physical discipline a little bit. And I discovered savate, which is French kickboxing. And that's what I did.
Is that the martial art that Sagat uses in Street Fighter 2?
No, that's Muay Thai, I think.
That's Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Does somebody use savate in Street Fighter?
It would not surprise me.
Maybe in Street Fighter 3, but I don't know well enough. Anyways.
You're getting kind of in the Jean-Claude Van Damme space when you start talking about French kickboxing.
French dance fighting.
Yeah, French dance fighting. Yeah.
I guess I thought savate was French kickboxing.
It is. Totally is. The version I learned was a little different from your standard savate, but I did test for regular savate, and I forget. I actually don't really remember how far I made it. I didn't make it very far.
Do they ever make jokes about idiot savates?
Yes. Yes.
A guy who walks in off the street and is an amazing... He's like Jean-Claude Van Damme on the first day.
Yeah. I really... So two things about it. One is I learned very quickly is that I was actually quite bad at martial arts. I would get my ass handed to me on the regular. Two, I loved that. I actually kind of liked... It was something that I was not
This Mulvey guy's breathing kind of funny.
Yeah.
What's going on? No, don't stop.
Yeah. It's hard to explain, but the lack of expectation of me to like perform incredibly well immediately, mm-hmm. and then to learn slowly, and the physical exercise was really rewarding to me.
Mm-hmm.
I kept it up until I moved away from Arizona. And I lost my coach. And my coach was a guy who did, he did this, and then he also did traditional Chinese medicine. And he was actually one of my girlfriend's traditional Chinese medicine doctors. It was a weird meetup. Like, wait, you know this guy? And
so he was the guy who crossed the streams, sort of martial arts, like practical physical guy, plus other woo elements.
That- and he was a boxer, which is what attracted me to this particular sport. And boxing was something I did when I was a kid at the Y. And so he was heavy into boxing, especially like Dempsey and the 30s guys. And his boxing style was all about that. Like the really low jabs and the moves that you don't really see in boxing anymore. And I just got wailed on. But we would go, he would say, he was very, this is a time when, MMA was becoming a thing, or it was already a thing, but it was still evolving into what it is today.
Yeah, MMA for a long time, it was kind of like anime in the 90s, where you kind of had to know a guy and he'd give you tapes.
Right, and that's precisely what this was. This was my entree into martial arts. And so, this was when, oh God, what is it? I just blanked on his name.
Gracie.
This is like the Gracie era.
Sure.
And so Brazilian stuff was all over the place, and capoeira, and...
Because before that, it was just big dudes, right?
Yeah.
Big, strong dudes with long arms.
Oh, God, I
that
remember
that would just
the...
pummel someone, and it would be over in 15 seconds,
because
the big dude just clobber you.
I remember the first UFC match I saw. Like, we were expecting, like, some seriously, like, Wu-Tang shit, right? You know? And so we get there, and it's this guy from somewhere in the South who is about the size of a refrigerator, weighs 7,000 pounds, is missing a few of his front teeth. He gets in the octagon. He pounds the guy to shit, comes out. They do a ringside interview, and the first thing he says is,
I have an erection.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, wow, okay, wasn't expecting... Why did I not think this was going to be how it worked out?
I look at that and I imagine, because I mean, the promise of MMA at the beginning, yeah, and I think, Casey, you've talked about this too,
oh, yeah,
was that it was like live action Street Fighter.
It was where, yeah, or it was going to be blood sport. It's going to be the kumite, right?
They give this conflicting martial arts style. You want to see the kung fu guy fight the wrestler. You want to see the karate guy fight the Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. You want to see these crazy mix-ups of styles the way you would in something like Enter the Dragon. And you don't quite get that, but I love the fact that this guy, if he had like a form to fill out to sign up for the tournament, like fighting style, it just says like, what a bobo. My fighting style is I'm really big and I have 2 life bars.
Yeah. and that guy went pretty damn far.
Yeah.
And so they had to add rules to prevent that guy from literally killing people. Oh, or from Kent Shamrock having his crotch completely destroyed or something like that. And so we would go around. And so because mixed martial arts was becoming a thing, I was encouraged to check out martial arts. The coach would say, go here, check this out. My pal Dirk would say the same thing. And then I got introduced to, you know, the folks who take a weekend class and now they're a martial arts trainer.
Oh, wow.
You know, and this was really, there's an Israeli martial art that was...
Krav
Maga was just like breaking through at the time, and I was starting to hear about it. And
it has a reputation of being the mean martial art.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you see videos of guys doing, it looks like he's doing Irish dancing while sitting in a chair at a guy, mm-hmm, is what it looked like. And I'm like, all right, I can get down to that. And so the first 2 people we checked out were completely, you know, they took one class and the guys, I'm a newbie, like I'm a complete noob, and that's the whole reason I'm there. I mm-hmm. like being the noob in this scenario, but the 2 guys I'm with are really well-traveled and know this stuff. And they're asking like more advanced questions, and the guy's like, I have no idea. And so I'm watching these other guys figure out the level of this guy, so to figure out what they can learn from him. And it became kind of clear that over the years, you know, over the months that I was working with them, that... Yeah, a lot of martial art artists, a lot of martial arts instructors are newer than I am, or they know like Taekwondo or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But that, you know, there's
are you throwing shade on Taekwondo?
No,
Korean martial arts.
No,
they're not real. Chinese martial arts are real.
I don't
Okinawan martial arts are real.
When you're a French kickboxer, you can't do that. All right, yeah. Like you're already really damn low on the totem pole. Especially since what I was doing was a Basque variant. And so, like nobody knew, like, what martial art... It would take me 20 minutes to explain.
Right.
I'm buying the fun. I'm not buying the history. I just like where I was. Right. And so we go to these places, and this guy would not know his stuff. Like, I'd ask questions, and I'd go over his head. And, but then, you know, this was in Arizona. Warrior University was a thing.
Speaking of frauds, I mean, you're learning wrestling from a guy who was a bad wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, so it makes sense that if you're going to be like the mecca of teachers that if you can't teach, you can't. I don't know. You can still open a school. There's nothing stopping you. But I mean, if it's a subject that somebody's coming in who knows even less than you and you know only a rudimentary amount, how much can you get away with bullshit? And how long can you string this person along? How long can you use what little you know? If you're the equivalent of, I don't know, a yellow belt or something, how long can you bullshit somebody?
Well, if you're teaching kids, if you're teaching a six-year-old guys or kids, it's mostly calisthenics. Like it's a fitness program, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And in a lot of schools or dojos or whatever, it's the newer guys who are teaching the kids. Mm-hmm. And that's because there's a hierarchy in there. But you know, once you get into like the sport of it or the people who are very interested in martial arts, you don't know who's who until you see it done. Because, you know, when in fighting, this is something I never got, was like, I was a bad shit talker. I didn't get psyched up in the way other people did. For me, getting in the ring and trying to go 3 rounds and trying to get this guy, was to me on the same order of, okay, I got to get this server running. It was just, I'm here to do a job. I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to move on. And, but you know, so everybody's talking up their game. Everybody's talking how great they are. It, confidence is a big part of martial arts. In all martial, you talk about kendo for hours on this one. So you don't know until they get in the ring and they either start teaching or they start not teaching and getting in trouble. And I saw some people get in trouble and get out of their depth pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I saw one guy being a smartass and he thought, well, I'm going to show up the teacher by switching up. And he just got an elbow to the face and it sounded like somebody had hit a melon with a mallet and he was bleeding for the next 20 minutes. I met a couple shoot fighters from who I think were associated with Warrior University, and I learned, or a couple professional wrestler types who were there to do some shoot. I learned a lot that day. Hmm. I was sore for a week, but I learned a lot that day. And out of context, that probably sounds awesome. Yeah. And so, like, with the amount of confidence you have to do martial arts, it's really susceptible to fraud. Mm. And if you look online, there's a forum called Bullshido, or I don't even know if that's still running.
It is.
But,
yeah.
Okay. Where people are calling each other frauds and da 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 da. And so I guess it depends on what you mean by legit.
I mean, there's different kinds of fraud, you could say. Yeah. The guy who believes in some sort of spiritualism where I can gather a chi in my hands and I can knock people out without touching them. You've seen those videos when it's... I mean, it could be psychosomatic. It could be that these people...
You mean you're talking about like when Steven Seagal does his floor exercises at a karate show?
Yeah, well, that's like on the other side of it is that you have Steven Seagal, who's basically... You ever see the end of the movie Bowfinger?
Where, no.
Okay, so at the end of the movie, it cuts to Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy in a fake martial arts movie where everyone else is a stuntman by them and they were just flailing around and the stuntmen are flipping and falling and like throwing themselves like over this guy's shoulder through a window. They're doing all the work where they're just
they're
like,
really, they're selling it, right? They're selling it.
They're selling, and it's essentially, when I look at the Steven Seagal thing, Steven Seagal knows how to do things, but he's too bored to be bothered to do those things. And you have a bunch of people who want to impress Steven Seagal and are getting paid right now, so they're going to make Steven Seagal look like $1 million, even if it also looks like he's not only lazy, but also taking liberties with them.
Well, Steven Seagal is approaching 70 years old, and he's overweight, and...
You wouldn't know it with that dyed black hair.
Yeah, right? And I'm not throwing shade on him for being overweight. I mean, just look at me. But he's an older dude, and he doesn't move like he used to. And he wasn't really moving like he used to even when he started his movie career. Because he started his movie career in his mid to late 30s. And he's forgotten stuff. He's gotten lazy. And he was doing some martial arts stuff in his early movies.
I mean, he's a legit martial artist, but he's also a phony.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the long story. I think we've talked about it on here before where, what is his name? Jean LaBelle. Jean LaBelle was the head...
The LaBelle story.
Yeah, the LaBelle story.
I can't tell you how,
You've heard the thing I love about the LaBelle
story... Is it the shitting his pants part of it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. So we have told the story on the pod before.
So the thing is, Steven Seagal was famous for taking liberties with his stunt guys, but also for talking all kinds of unrealistic shit. And in this case, for the folks who don't know this story, Steven Seagal was on the set of one of his 90s action movies, I forget which one, Under Siege, it was another one of the lesser ones with three words in the title, like, you know, Out for Justice or something. Mm. And he was talking
shit. Out for Justice is the best one.
Out for Justice. Yeah. What was the one where he was in a coma and comes out and for revenge?
Oh.
Is it Fire Down Below?
No.
Fire Down Below is the environmental one.
He becomes a Native American by sheer will.
Right.
This guy is like, he is like the turducken of cultural appropriation. He's like trying to do five at once. It's amazing. This white guy who's both Asian and Native American spiritualist at the same time.
Yeah, Asian, Native American, Cossack, Russian.
Pick a lane, dude.
Japanese guy.
But anyways, he was talking shit on set, and Jean LaBelle, who is a sort of legendary stuntman, martial artist guy.
Indeed.
Was the head of the department doing stunt coordination. And Steven Seagal said to a bunch of these people. This is the thing with lying like this, is that you're lying around people. There's a very good chance that if you're a big action star, that a lot of these people are better at what you're bullshitting than you are. Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by people who, if there's ever going to be a crowd who's going to spot bullshit, it's your stunt crew.
Yeah.
Because the difference is they're just not Hollywood handsome. That's usually the thing stopping them.
Right.
Or they're not interested in acting.
Right.
But they want to do fights and stuff like that. And they know this stuff. And these guys are legit badasses. And anyway, Steven Seagal was talking shit and saying that he was immune to being choked.
Yes.
And I can tell you this. I'm not a doctor or anything. But if you have a throat, you are not immune to being choked. Do you have a blowhole, Steven Seagal? Do you have another means of breathing?
Gills. He has gills, obviously.
And I guess what will happen if you do this sort of shit enough and sit in front of legit guys is those legit guys will say, I'd like to see that.
Mm.
And we saw that.
Yeah.
He put him in a chokehold. It did not last very long. And the story is that Steven Seagal shat his pants right there and then.
Yep.
And the thing is, this is what I love about Gene LaBelle. If there's a thing that says about a genuine badass versus a phony, is the phony is the guy who's like the town crier for himself.
Right.
He's telling everyone in ear range, you know, hey, I'm the bad guy. I'm the most awesome guy. And Steven Seagal, by a phony, by the way, has all these bullshit stories about training Navy SEALs and the CIA. And he like fought the Yakuza to stand still single-handedly in Japan while mm-hmm. opening his own dojo. Mm-hmm. Mountaintop masters in right. secret, you know, monk monasteries and all that sort of bullshit you see in movies. And Gene LaBelle's just a guy who knows how to fight really fucking well.
Yeah.
And Gene LaBelle doesn't need to tell stories to people. He doesn't tell the story about Steven Seagal shedding his pants. He just gets asked constantly.
He gets asked about it a lot. You have to dig to find a video of Gene LaBelle talking about it.
He doesn't want to talk about
no.
it. In fact, he's like a badass, just goes, yeah, we had a disagreement or something like that. He'll say something very vague,
yeah.
and he'll let everyone else tell the legend.
Yeah.
And he'll say, yeah, we had a disagreement. There was a thing and, you know, whatever. You know, he doesn't need to prove anything.
I think he's no longer with us.
Oh, Gene LaBelle.
Yeah, I don't have internet. I can't check.
I think that Mike was bringing this up because I was telling him a story. Have I told you, Sam, about my neighbor growing up in Oregon? He lived at.
No.
He's the neighbor at the bottom of the driveway, basically.
Okay.
He was a. I won't name check him here. I don't want anyone to go.
Did
and,
he know
like,
the secret five-handed death punch? Or
I'm
something?
Sure he did. Right. So he was a guy who was like he had been in Colorado before, and he had or one or more sort of karate studios. I think it was Kenpo, I believe.
Okay.
Korean, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Kenpo is Korean. So he moved to Southern. Or is Kenpo Korean?
I don't.
Where is it?
I don't
Okinawan.
Think it is.
Anyways, he moved to Southern Oregon, and he apparently downgraded a lot from where he was there, and he moved in. And the first thing he did was he gave us one of the books that he had produced in like the 70s, and it was this super thin paper-bound book that had pictures of him, like black and white pictures of like doing like cool karate kicks and stuff.
With the cool sideburns.
But he did have cool sideburns. So this is obviously like at least 15 or 20 years before, published before. And it was like techniques to murder people. It's like, so it freaked out my mom that was the thing that he first brought home. But he was like a guy who
teach
like
you cobra fingers or
he
whatever.
He ran like a karate studio, and he was for a 8 or 9 year old like me, was scrawny and small, very intimidating person. He was a loud mouth, and you know, he was ridiculous, and I sort of as a teenage years it sort of flew by, and I didn't pay much attention to him because I wasn't friends with any of his children. But later I started to learn like, oh, what is the thing that he like, what's his game, what is the thing that he does. So like in the early 2000s I started to look up what he had been doing, and there's a pretty good Bullshito thread that's still archived about this, is that he basically is a guy who I assume had legit martial arts training at various places, and when he was probably in his teens and 20s, was probably a pretty active, pretty formidable guy, and then just decided he was going to become this sort of mail order business guy, where it isn't really about training people or fighting in tournaments. It's about self-published books about mind control and stuff like that. Hypnosis and mind control.
The Ishida Kim route.
I don't know who that is. But, okay. But I mean...
Dangerous Band Secrets of the Hidden Masters, right. That'll teach you how to kill a man with two fingers.
This is like how to seduce a woman and stuff like this. Like all of this garbage...
That's a bigger red flag.
All of this garbage stuff that's really about... getting really credulous people to pony up $25 to buy those ring bound cheap ass printed stuff and oversell something that was just basically made out of garbage. And you like listen to the stuff that exists on his of the YouTube presence that he had 10 years ago. He hasn't done anything. It's like it's the psycho babble listening to him talk. He will like throw out Edgar Casey and it'll throw out
I've never heard anybody reference Casey.
Like I Ching and Edgar Casey, and then you can tell just by like the rhetoric that he's saying, I don't even know if he understands what he's saying. Like it's just a word soup of
he doesn't
woo
need
shit.
To if you don't either.
Right. But I mean he has enough people who are like, yeah, this guy must be serious. He's so scary and intimidating. And look at all these degrees he has. And of course, degrees he gave himself.
Right.
Mail order degrees you can get. He's clearly like a charlatan in that mode. And his way of producing for himself is being a full-time charlatan and having people pay him for his books that he may or may not write about subjects that are so dubious that they can't be disproven. Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you remember the Count Dante ads
in
the back
Marvel
of the comic books?
Yeah.
Back of, so I think that guy was in Chicago. So that was this whole...
Deadliest Man Alive.
So that's part of the sort of the BS side. When ninjas were becoming popular thanks to comic books... And everybody wanted to be a ninja. So
Bruce
this guy,
Lee movies were coming to the
US.
Yeah,
so obviously this guy named Count Dante, which, you know.
That's and nice. He had an amazing, like, afro and these
cool.
sideburns. And he had this, like, his claw hands that he held up in those ads.
But somehow, like, that got connected to this Ishida Kim guy, who's still active today. And he does, like, the way of the ninja. And if you check out his, like, that's sort of, like, the apex of BS. Like, mm-hmm. To peddle that is pretty damn amazing. And like he does it pretty effectively, but it's obviously BS. And he's got this book, and I have a copy of The Amorous Adventures of Ishida Kim, which is erotic novel written by a ninja.
Sure.
And it's what you expect. Maybe I should bring it along next time. but I found it at a store. A friend of mine who runs a Tinkertopia, and he's like, hey, I got this. And I was like, he's like, Sam? Like, hell yeah, be right down.
It just, I immediately get the vibe that this dude is a master seducer. I just imagine that there's somebody who bought into his bullshit, and she's got a positive pregnancy test, and ninja vanish,
yeah.
But I mean, I look at this. Count Dante was an interesting figure.
Yeah.
Because it goes fucking crazy. If
it
you
goes
go into
real
this,
deep. Yeah.
I mean, there's literal dojo wars that start up with him and another one of his students literally dynamiting another dojo.
Yeah.
I mean, he had like a pet tiger. I mean, in a lot of ways, the only person I can really compare him to is like, was it like Anton LaVey or something?
Yeah. Anton LaVey is a fair comparison.
Where you're like, I am a living cartoon character, but the people that I know talking to me know even less about this world that I'm kind of creating a persona for. So nobody can call bullshit on me. So I can make it really weird. And I think we were talking about this earlier. The tension that exists in certain people, especially frauds, is that there's somebody who's kind of driven by ego. They're desperately trying to make sure that everyone thinks that they're this thing instead of who they really are, which is obviously usually kind of insecure, scared. But at the same time, the tension's created by this other side of them that is desperate for attention, desperate for prestige, desperate for the ability to impress people with a crazy story. So the stories keep getting bigger and the tension builds up because on this other hand, the odds of you getting bullshit called on you get higher and higher because the more outlandish the stories get, the more it strains incredulity. The more people go, okay, come on. Are you saying you really fought the Yakuza and that they surrendered because they just realized they couldn't defeat you? So you came to an impasse? This Yes, like, come on. Right. There's got to be a point. And it's
at
like,
some point, you're taking a dump.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to be there with a 22, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you see the figures, and it's not even just in martial arts. Like, Elon Musk is a great example of a guy who has that same tension.
Oh, totally.
And you see with the purchase of Twitter, the things just get bigger and bigger. And it's like, he's the new Thomas Edison, but not in the good ways.
And here's the thing.
The kill animals ways.
Like, if I could buy it as performance art, mm-hmm. if it's presented to me, if these personalities and this ways of being is presented to me as performance art, I would be interested in it and I'd respect the fuck out of it.
Like the little thing with the psychic client, you know, for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But more honest than that, yeah. You know, like Count Dante was pretty smart. And pretty fucking crazy.
And he was a legit dude.
And he was a legit dude.
I mean, he was crazy, and he was also a liar and a fraud in some ways, but there was a legit understanding of martial arts underneath it, and he was one of the first guys that actually taught non-white people in a lot of these dojos.
There's that, too.
So there's some good stuff about him, but the fact is he also bought into his own bullshit, and it ballooned him into this crazy town.
Right. And if I could buy it, if it's present, like I said, if you present it to me as performance art, I love watching videos about it. It's damned entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want me to take it seriously, I can't. And I just don't appreciate it when people con other people, and it makes me feel bad. So I like it when these folks are like, not Count Dante specifically, but like when Ashita Kim, some of those. Oh, what is that one Japanese art where you use the opponent's force against them?
Judo.
But the one, and then it goes on to the like to the thing where they're.
No, their energy, yeah, their key energy,
their
or whatever.
Key energy, and they're messing.
Then he's basically doing Hadouken moments, and guys are falling down across the room.
Yeah, right. That bothers me a little bit. But if you're living this crazy life, I can almost appreciate his performance art. But to really answer your question, sort of fundamentally, how do I know if a martial artist is legit? Is I treat it like it's a fandom.
Mm-hmm.
It's nerdery. Like any, that's what I thought. Like. People who did physical stuff were a breed apart. We're just completely different people. Speaking of breeding, we're just completely different and had different mindsets than I did. But then I got into the world of martial arts and I would meet people and I'm like, no, this
nerds.
Is the same. These are just fit nerds, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I can get down with this. I know how to find the good guys.
Well, yeah, once you have your ear gets attuned for, like, when someone is making claims that are absurd, right?
Well, ask them about martial arts, and if they start talking about the stuff that they can do, like, I can kick above my head, and I beat up 100 guys, and I'm part of, all right, you're in it for the ego rub.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if the guy starts talking, and I say guy, because it's...
Almost always a guy.
Yeah, it really is. That was one... Which is a shame.
Almost so, always a white guy.
We're talking about this, and I just had this moment in my head where it jumped over to a disagreement that I've had with my significant other, and I think it cuts across here, which is chiropractors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this thing where if someone calls themselves a chiropractor, even if they're the quote good kind of chiropractor where all they really do is just like the spinal adjustment, which is the only thing that chiropractors do that at all has any medical or scientific significance whatsoever, even if someone says, oh, that's all I do, I basically just like a physical therapist and a masseuse and I do these adjustments, but I have the degree and I call myself a chiropractor, I'm going to say I don't trust you, I wouldn't refer people to you, and I will treat you with suspicion.
Right.
Even if I think that the intent behind why the person chose this profession was one that they wanted to help people. Because of the, listen, here's this one technique in chiropractic that's about adjusting the joints, you know, the bones and the joints. And then there's like the 100,000 other things that, depending on what flavor of variety of chiropractor you have.
If I tap on your hip like this, it cures gout.
Right. Mm-hmm. All that stuff. The problem is the bullshit that is attached to chiropractic outweighs just like the moderate benefit of just like the one thing of adjustment. So anyone who's going to be like, yeah, I'm a chiropractor, my immediate thought is I don't know if you're a charlatan, and I'm not sure if you're actually in it to help people,
right.
Or if it's just a snake oil.
Well, that's so in martial arts, like I said, if you go in there and say, so tell me about what you do, you know, and don't ask too many, don't put them in a place, just let them narrate. And if they start talking about all the cool things that they can do, all right, you're probably, you know, oh, I beat up five guys in the street. Sure you have. Okay, that's cool. But if they start talking about, like, this awesome fight I saw once, blah, 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 or even better, if they start talking about, like, cool things, what they like about the art that they're doing. Specifically, oh, this art is great because da, 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 da. Or, like, my friend Dirk, oh, he would go on for hours about Irish stick fighting. And I actually picked up some stick fighting from him. But he wasn't talking about, like, how he could beat people up. He was just talking about how cool the art was. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks I pay attention to. If you find them, listen to them. Now, if you're going for your kid, I don't really care about the art. I'm more caring. I care more about the safety.
Like, yeah.
Are my kids going to be safe? Is this a safe place for them? Are they going to get hurt?
I mean, honestly, my oldest and my youngest, but now my oldest is now the only one left, going to, they do Tang Sudo, which is like an offshoot of Taekwondo. And my big thing was, like, is this guy going to the teacher? Is the teacher going to be
Cobra
this authoritarian asshole? If they, right. they were going to use shame or humiliation or that sort of stuff. And this is just basically... The majority of this guy's income comes from teaching kids that are probably under 10.
Yeah.
And he probably has, you know, maybe 10 or 15 students that are teenagers and older who are there. But the money he makes is probably off of the little kids. So he knows he's great. There's no red flags.
Right.
But there's a reputation of it being just like, wasn't helped by Karate Kid. Right. Yeah. But the guy who lived down the street certainly was this, where it's about a mind fuck, where the whole thing is, it's about discipline, it's about subordination, and it's about this thing where you're to be lent yourself to be crafted by this megalomaniac, and who knows what they're going to do when you're not there.
Yeah, but they put a bunch of toxic bullshit in your head about domination and winning, and it's never about self-confidence, it's never about self-defense, it's never about fitness or health. It's just about this, like, mindset of being a bully, basically. And right. if you can, you get one of those guys, and you don't want those people getting their fingers on your kid's brain.
Right.
You know, you don't want to have a bunch of shit like that is going to come out in different ways. You know, some dude with, like, a Who is John Galt sticker on his car.
Right.
And he comes out with, like, the red, white, and blue, like, headband on. You're like, who the fuck is this clown? And he's just, like, screaming about, there's no going to be no fucking crying in here, you pussies. And you just go... There's probably a million guys like that, and I imagine going shopping for a martial arts teacher is you look for those red flags, and they might not be apparent when he's trying to sell you something. He's like, he sees your child who probably has some self-confidence issues and is like, I still want his money, even if he quits. I can still get a couple
things. It's a subscription game. It's a business. Right. It's a business of selling subscriptions, right?
Yeah.
Even if they don't, you want them to sign up and not come because that's the way you make the most money and keep the lights on, right?
Well, and as someone who's paying that guy, you have to do the internal math, or you have to do the math for your kid. Is like, what is the kid getting out of this? Or what am I getting out of this?
Yeah.
What is the per, like, he's obvious, you know, my coach is definitely going to apply some discipline to me, you know, suggest that I do things, kind of help me with, he would talk about stuff I should be doing when I wasn't at the dojo.
Sure.
Not the dojo, at the, I can't remember the word.
The classroom.
Yes. And we actually met, he borrowed a capoeira place, and that's,
oh,
we
cool.
Were.
Yeah.
And a Sal. Is what it is.
That's the most, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe this is just a West Coast thing or a Pacific Northwest thing. Is capoeira like the hottest, hottest hot shit that all the people want to join when they join learn martial arts now? Because within probably a 5 mile radius of my house, I think there are five of them.
Yeah.
I think there are five different capoeira studios.
The Gracie Brazilian jiu-jitsu stuff.
Is it just like, oh, influence. We got, because
the,
he was,
is that the dance fighting?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I know that.
But
one.
I was like, oh, it's just because it's the popular thing. It's no longer Bruce Lee is the, you know, Bruce Lee is the draw for people. So some kind of kung fu. Now it's like, oh, this guy was awesome at UFC 20 years ago. And now everyone wants to do UFC like that guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't come into it like that. Just is literally my friend Dirk is like, hey, I think you'd really enjoy this. And I went in and I sure as fuck did.
Yeah.
And I did it for 2 or 3 years, and I only stopped when I moved up here. And yeah. if I could find a place up here that was doing it, I'd consider starting again, but I'd have to wear a hamster ball on my head at this point. Like, how many things are wrong there?
The concussed? You wouldn't want to get concussed?
Not so much. It wouldn't be the concussion. I might pop a rivet.
No, that's not good.
Leak all over the place.
That's not good at all.
Helmet, you look like Master Blaster.
Yeah, Master Blaster or Dead Mouse or something like that. Yeah.
That's intimidation.
Yeah, I guess. Hard to breathe, though.
There was a larger conversation we were having. It's about, like, it's easier to be a charlatan in a field where, like, the truthfulness and the applicability of what it is that your profession is supposed to be doing is nebulous, right? Like, it's easier to be someone who is a psychic, right? Because you'd be like, well, there's not really any truth to any of it, so it's just how convincing you can be. Just how much you can apply charisma over the top of it.
It's a problem. It's a problem that I'm facing even right now, outside of like martial arts or anything, is that when I am really good at my job, when I am doing my job perfectly or when I am at my best, what I'm doing to the people I'm working for is transparent. All their stuff just works. And they don't think about it because they're not supposed to think about it because that's the point. And so it's hard to gauge how good you are or what, you know, whether you're meeting your goals when it's, you know, it's not like I'm building a building like, oh, there's a building there that wasn't there before. Right, it's like, no, everything's just working. Everything's fine.
When it's ineffable, right? Yeah. When the product is ineffable. In your sense, then, and for what you do, there is a product to give to somebody. But when it's like learning, you know, we're going to knowledge. I'm passing along this knowledge to you.
Yeah.
Like, what is that knowledge?
Like, I'm in 4 hours, I'm going to be up doing Camp Quest Northwest for a week. And yeah, I'm teaching kids. We're building, I'm doing circuits again this year. We're building a battery-powered nightlight. Actually, oh my God, this battery-powered nightlight. So I wanted to build, so last year we did a Jewel Thief. Look it up. It's a way to power a dead battery power an LED with a dead battery. It's a little charge pump. And I did it so that kids could wind their own transformers.
That's
which
cool.
is something that EE guys like who aren't like badass into that end of it find a little like space magic because it is like transformers are weird. So like, all right, here's your first circuit. First thing you're doing is you're winding a.
My brain is processing the word transformers on a totally different right, level, yeah. And I have to constantly reset.
Yeah, I still do as well. So I literally do in my bit This thing is more than meets the eye. Nobody gets it because it's 30 years later, but...
I don't admit it. It makes me happy when something like that bombs.
I don't. You can say that, but...
It means Hasbro lost.
I just hosted my two of my nephews here, a couple more of my nephews, but my 17-year-old nephew is a Transformers mega fan. He is going to be invited on a Transformers panel, by the way. He's already been pre-invited
I may meet this person.
he's just decided, I mean, he basically grew up on the cultural spin from the first Michael Bay movie,
okay, yeah,
and then
yeah.
all of the spin-offs that happened from there. But he is like an expert in from the inception to the current, like he's got 3 racks in his room filled with Transformers, and what he's doing right now is that he's in London because there's the Transformers Con in UK somewhere.
Yeah.
So he's flying to another country to go to a Transformers Con, and he loves it all, and we watched the 85 movie together.
Wow.
It was amazing watching it with him and being like him pointing out some of the stuff about the animation that I didn't realize. I've seen this like 35 times. Yeah. How are you telling me things that I don't know?
If I could reset my brain, if I had to start over from zero, like no hobbies, no job, no context, and I could choose what I was into, I would pick the Transformers fandom. It is so positive. I've never met a Transformers mega fan who was like incredibly poisonous. I'm sure they exist.
Right.
I'm sure. But you read TF Wiki, it's funny as fuck. It's some of the most self-aware stuff I've read, but in a really positive way. And
But is there a version of Transformers Clompers? Is there a is there people that like to fuck in the wearing Transformer costumes?
It's the internet. Yes. That just sounds really.
if there were, what would be the Clompers? What would be the Transformers name for them? I don't know. Well, that's to the listeners. You guys can come up with the best name. We'll give a prize for the best name.
Yeah, that's going to be processing in the back of my head. But this year we're doing I'm actively trying to get that out of my head.
Radio versus the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Doran, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobias Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just $1 a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Grandmaster is the only person ever to wear the rainbow belt. It's a belt color that he created and awarded to himself. It is the highest honor in all of karate. He achieved this rank after he challenged and defeated all three other grandmasters in the state in unarmed combat to the death. He finished each fight with his signature technique, technique only he knew. Technique he never even taught me. He punched through his opponent's heads with his index finger. He was the greatest man who ever lived.